The recording that you're about to listen to is a talk from the City Bible Forum. We would appreciate you respecting our copyright by not making copies of this talk or altering the content in any way. We hope that you find the material beneficial. If you would like more information on the City Bible Forum, you can visit us on the web at citybibleforum.org.
Public transport is fantastic, except that it's public. You have to share it with people. So what are your worst moments of public transport? Is it the guy with the man spread, the person who falls asleep on you, the person who sings to their music? For me, the worst moment of public transport is when you get off a train and you and hundreds of other people go up the stairs, but there's always one man trying to come down the stairs to catch his train. Now, you feel sorry for him, but at the same time, you feel like saying, hey, buddy, the train has gone. Stop going the wrong way and just go with the flow. And maybe that's what it feels like to be a person of faith today. The train has gone. Stop trying to go the wrong way and go with the flow. In the last 5 years on social media, many prominent Christians are now sharing what they call their deconversion stories. They once had a faith, but now they've left the faith and they've gone with the flow. So why don't we just do the same? Why don't we leave our faith, stop trying to go against the flow and go with the flow? Well, welcome again to Bible Shots. We're in the middle of a three-week series on how to survive in a post-faith world. We're looking at stories from the book of Daniel. And today we're looking at a story that comes to us in Daniel chapter 3. It's a long story. We can't go through all of it. Hopefully you can read it when you get home. But it's a familiar story where Daniel and his three friends find themselves in Babylon under King Nebuchadnezzar's rule. King Nebuchadnezzar makes a big statue, asks them to bow down and worship it. They refuse, they're punished, they're thrown into a furnace, but God saves them from the fire. So what can we learn from this story?
Well, these are some things we can take home. I reckon if Daniel's three friends are around today, this is what they'll look like. Rappers, counter-cultural, edgy, cool, or defiant protesters, or a brave stand against a juggernaut of evil and power. This is what we can take away from this story. Every age will have a God to bow down to. Every age will have a God to bow down to. Verse 1, King Nebuchadnezzar made an image of gold, 60 cubits high, 6 cubits wide, and set it upon the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. Nations and people of every language, this is what you're commanded to do. You must fall down and worship the image of gold that King Nebuchadnezzar has set up. Whoever does not fall down and worship will immediately be thrown into a blazing furnace.
King Nebuchadnezzar sets up an image, a god, and they are commanded to worship this god. But every age has a god that we worship. When my wife was 38 weeks pregnant with our second child,
I remember I took her to the opera house to watch a play to celebrate our last 2 weeks of adult freedom before another kid comes along. But the problem with the opera house is it's hard to find parking. The parking in the opera house is way too expensive. And so it's hard to look for free parking.
So I looked everywhere for free parking. And finally, 10 blocks away on Pitt Street, I found free parking.
So I made my pregnant wife walk 10 blocks because I did not want to pay for parking. Because as an Asian,
I worship the god of free parking. In the Asian culture, we will pay $100 for a seafood dish, but we will not pay $5 for parking. I value free parking above everything else. Free parking is my god. But every culture has its god. In traditional cultures, we make families our god. We value family above everything else. We do whatever we can to make our parents happy.
In capitalist cultures, we make the market our god.
We value the dollar above everything else, and we do whatever we can to make our personal finances happy.
In post-traditional cultures, we value
personal happiness above all things. You only live once, so you got to do whatever it takes to make you happy.
In family cultures,
we might make our children our gods. We do whatever we can to help them get ahead. We value their personal happiness above all things. But every culture has a god. And if we stop believing in God, nature abhors a vacuum and we'll find something else to replace that god.
Just a few months ago, The Atlantic had this on YouTube, how work became the new religion. Work is the new God. We stopped believing in God, so now work has become our God. We look to work to be our identity, our status, and our security. Every age will find a God that we must worship. And every age expects you to conform to its God. Verse 2, and I've put this in green just so you can hear the parody that's coming through the story. King Nebuchadnezzar then summoned the satraps, prefects, governors, advisors, treasurers, judges, magistrates, and all the other provincial officials to come to the dedication of the image he had set up. Verse 3, so the satraps, prefects, governors, advisors, treasurers, judges, magistrates, and all the other provincial officials assembled for the dedication of the image. Verse 4, then the herald loudly proclaimed, nations and peoples of every language, this is what you're commanded to do. Verse 5, as soon as you hear the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, pipe, and all kinds of music, you must fall down and worship the image of gold that King Nebuchadnezzar has set up. Verse 7, therefore, as soon as they heard the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, and all kinds of music, all the nations and peoples, every language, fell down and worshipped the image of gold that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Everyone is asked to conform. In my backyard, I have a lawn. What would you do with a backyard of lawn? If you're a Caucasian Australian, you mow it. If you're an Asian Australian, you grow vegetables in it so you can sell it at the market and make some money out of your backyard. If you're an Italian Australian, you concrete it because it's practical. But there's something bland about concrete. And so in architecture, when they make buildings out of concrete, it's practical, but they give it the name brutalist architecture because it's bland, it's brutalist. And in Eastern Europe, in communist countries, they have this thing, brutalist architecture, bland, drab, grey, concrete, conformist architecture. And that's what we have here in this story. The satraps, prefects, governors, advisors, treasurers, judges, magistrates, and all the other provincial officials. The satraps, prefects, governors, advisors, treasurers, judges, magistrates, and all the other provincial officials. Drab, grey, brutalist, conformist. The horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, and all kinds of music. The horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, and all kinds of music. The nations and peoples of every language. The nations and peoples of every language. Drab, grey, brutalist, bland, conformist. But every age asks us to be bland, brutalist, grey, and conformist. When I lived in the USA, the Conservative Party, the Republicans, everyone's expected to have a flag pin on their lapel. So you go to the Republican convention, flag pin, flag pin, flag pin, flag pin. Everyone must conform, too scared not to. Every time there's a gun shooting, our thoughts and prayers, 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 our thoughts and prayers. Brutalist, bland, conforming. The Democrats, when asked about open borders, yes, I'm on for open borders, 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 open borders. Everyone must conform. You're too scared not to conform. And so in conservative churches, you must show the flag, you must virtue signal, show your tribal belonging. Progressive churches, progressive flags. In Japanese work cultures, you must look the same, wear the uniform, be the first to turn up, be the last to leave. In progressive environmentalist cultures, earth hour, everyone must turn their lights off. Everyone's too scared not to conform. Every age asks you to conform. But here's what we can learn from the three Jews. Three things. Number one, trust that God has everything under control. Verse 14, and Nebuchadnezzar said to them, if you do not worship the image, you will be thrown into a blazing furnace. Then what God will be able to rescue you from my hand? Verse 16, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego replied to him, King Nebuchadnezzar, we don't need to defend ourselves before you in this matter. If we are thrown into the blazing furnace, the God we serve is able to deliver us from it, and he will deliver us from your majesty's hand. But even if he doesn't, we want you to know, your majesty, that we will not serve your gods or worship the image of gold you have set up. The three Jews trust that God has everything under control. Now, my wife and I love cooking, and we love inviting people over for dinner. We love hospitality. But if it was left up to me, if I was looking after dinner, this is what I'll cook. Spaghetti bolognese. Because the recipe's simple, the ingredients are cheap, it's easy to make. I've done it 1,000 times before. It's guaranteed to work. But when my wife entertains, if we have people over, oh, this time try something new, something exotic, something we've never done before. She'll come home with quail. I'll go, quail, we have never caught quail. What are you doing? Oh, have some octopus. Octopus, we have never done this before. What are you doing? But every dinner party, it always turns out well. And I need to learn, relax. My wife has it all under control. She knows what she's doing. And Daniel and the three friends are the same. They don't know why God has put them in Babylon. They don't know why they're being asked to bow down before an image. They don't know if God will save them or not. But they trust God has everything under control. They are here because this is exactly where God wants them to be. It's the same for us. We don't know why God has given us a narcissist bully as our boss. We don't know why we have diabetes, asthma, and depression. We don't know why we've lost a loved one. And we may pray to God to rescue us. He may not. But we trust that God has everything under control. As Christians, we don't know why our church doesn't get its lease renewed. We don't know if we can teach scripture in the local schools next year. We don't know if they'll allow chaplains in the university in 10 years' time. And when you pray to God, and you may answer, you may not answer, but either way you know, He's got it all under control. We are here because this is exactly where God wants us to be. Number two, trust that God will be with you no matter what. Verse 24, then King Nebuchadnezzar leapt to his feet in amazement, and he asked his advisors, weren't there 3 men that we tied up and threw into the fire? Look, I see 4 men walking around in the fire, unbound and unharmed, and the 4th looks like a son of the gods. No matter what happens, even though they're put in the furnace, Daniel and his 3 friends know they won't suffer alone. God will be there with them. I remember when I drove my pregnant wife, pregnant with our first child, to the hospital, about to give birth. I thought, boy, childbirth has changed a lot. The last few decades, when I was born, they made the woman go in and they made the man stay outside. They wouldn't let him go in. These days, when they make the woman go in, they force the partner to go in there, kicking and screaming, even if that's not what you want to do. And I remember when the baby finally came, they put the baby in my hands, and I thought, my goodness, what have we done? We've brought a human being onto this planet. And then my mind, because I'm weird, went into funny places. And I thought, and we brought you to a world which is full of pain, suffering, and disease. You're going to get your bones broken playing rugby. You're going to get your heart broken by a girl. And because I'm a doctor, I know you have a 1 in 3 chance of dying from cancer. I can't stop any of these things from happening. But no matter what, as your father, I will be there with you. And God doesn't guarantee to remove suffering. In fact, in the Bible, He guarantees His followers will suffer, but God guarantees He will be there with them. And in this story, God sends an angel, a son of God, probably the pre-incarnate Jesus, to be with the 3 Jews in the flames. And it's the same with us. No matter what happens to us, God sends us His son, Jesus. He came. He became one of us. He suffers with us and dies on a cross. He suffers along with us. We don't suffer alone. My youngest boy, whenever I tell him to take a shower, he says, no, I don't want to have a shower. And at first I thought he was disobeying me. Then after a while I realised, no, he's actually afraid to take a shower in the bathroom alone. Maybe he saw a video of something, I don't know. And then so he said, can you at least be in the bathroom with me? So I go, okay, so ever since I've been in the bathroom with him, he's been happy to shower. He just didn't want to shower alone. And it's the same with us. No matter what happens, we don't suffer alone. There's this amazing verse in the New Testament where Saul is persecuting the followers of Jesus. And Jesus actually says to Saul, why do you persecute me?
Somehow Jesus suffers along with us. We do not suffer alone. His Spirit is in us and he suffers with us.
And then number three, trust that God really is the one and only true God. Verse 28. And in this amazing reversal, Nebuchadnezzar said, "Praise be to the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel and rescued his servants. They trusted in him and defied the king's command, and they were willing to give up their lives rather than serve or worship any god except their own God. Therefore, I decree that the people of any nation or language who say anything against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego be cut into pieces." Why? Because no other God can save this way. In the end, they're not just trusting that God has everything under control. They're not just trusting that God is with them. They're actually trusting that God is the one and only true God. Just like you, I work in the city and I commute on a bicycle in and out of the city. I love riding a bicycle because every day is a near-death experience. Every day is a day I should have died but did not. So every day is a day I thank God that I still have. Now, a few years ago, I rode to the city and there was a mini cyclone in Sydney. And that was a day when streets got flooded, backyards got washed into the ocean, and the Premier put out an evacuation order for Sydney. He said, "Everyone, if you can, get out now." And people at work were saying to me, "You're not riding your bicycle home in this." I said, "I've got no other choice. I came in this. I have to go home in this." And then everyone said, "No, no, find some other way." But as I rode my bicycle, I was so glad I did, because cars were going nowhere that day. Public transport got shut down. This is a picture I took as I went over Piedmont Bridge. I got out of the city. I didn't just have the better way. I didn't just have the best way. I had the only way. And same with the three Jews. They haven't just got a God who is in control. They haven't just got a God who will be with them. They've actually got the only God who can save. And it's the same with us. Who is going to be our God? And as we heard earlier, we all have a God. So who's our God going to be? If we make our children our God, well, they will never be good enough for us, and we will never be good enough for them. And we'll destroy them, and they will destroy us. If we make work our God, well, we will never be good enough for our work, and work will never be good enough for us. It won't give us the status and security we're looking for. We can try to make personal happiness our God, but we will never be good enough for it, and we'll be always chasing something we can't find. Only God can save. We will always be good enough for this God because of Jesus, and he will always be good enough for us. He will fulfill us. He will forgive us, and only he can save. Well, I hope you enjoyed today's story, and hopefully what you can pick up in the story is where everyone else was drab, grey, conformist, going with the flow, one dimension. Daniel's three friends stand out. They had names, they had personalities. They're in 3D, and we are the same if we make a stand for God and go against the flow we have to. This is Kodak. They were the biggest company when I was a kid, and they're gone. Companies come and companies go. The top 100 companies from 100 years ago are not the top 100 companies today. Companies come, they go. Kingdoms come, kingdoms go. Cultural trends come and cultural trends go. If we go with the flow, we'll be just part of something transient. Only God and his kingdom will last forever. So why should I keep my trust in God? Because God has everything under control. He is with me no matter what. And he's the only God who can save. And so I will find not just a better way, not just a best way, but I will find the only way.
Where was Daniel in the passage?
Such a, All we know is in the story he's not mentioned, and we don't know why. So maybe Babylon is a big place and he was in some other part of Babylon at that time. But really, it's, the Bible has this delicious ambiguity about it where we're just left with that question and it just hangs over the passage, doesn't it?
Other questions, comments?
Yes.
Yeah. Todd? What would you say if someone says, it's enough just to trust in God, why do we get Jesus?
Oh, what would someone say? It's enough to trust in God. Why do we need Jesus? Because in the end, how do we know God? So how do we know we're not just worshipping a God that's in the image of our own imagination? But because God is personal, the only way to know God is the way he reveals himself, and that is through Jesus. So I like to say, if God is real, if God is love, if God is personal, then the facts matter. As you've heard me say before, if I said to you, I'm married to my wife, her name is Eric, she's a Viking, and she went to the University of Norway, you'd be thinking, I don't think you know your wife, but if I said to you, her name is Stephanie, she went to the University of Sydney, she was born in Sydney, you say, I think you know your wife, because the facts matter. You have to get them right. And if God was just imagining or abstract, then we can say anything about him that we want. But if he's real, loving, and personal, and knowable, then the facts matter. And they matter so much he has to send his son Jesus so that we know what the facts are. And the facts matter so much that Jesus has to die on a cross for us, because there is only one way, there is only one God. Otherwise, he wouldn't have to die on a cross and he wouldn't have to come.
Maybe a follow-up question that's come up a couple of times with other talks we've run.
Sure.
There are plenty of people who would be followers of Jesus who, you know, suffered or even died for following him. So why say there's no other way to be saved instead of just there is no way to be saved? Because plenty of people who follow him don't get saved. They die in terrible circumstances.
Yeah, so that's why the three friends, they say God will save us, but even if he does not, we worship him. So meaning, okay, God has the power to save, so if he doesn't save us, it's not because he doesn't love us, it's not because he's not powerful enough to. He must have a loving, powerful, wise reason for allowing what to happen just happen. And so we'll still trust him no matter what. So the Bible's claim is that God will be with us, and it's not why is there evil, why is there suffering, but how do I navigate suffering? And so we see the answer there. Even in the suffering, God sends the Son of God, pre-incarnate Jesus, to be with them in their suffering. And that's the same claim the Bible has with us. So God could remove suffering. He's a loving God, so he doesn't like us suffering. So there must be a loving, powerful reason for why we're suffering. And it's so loving, so powerful, that even Jesus has to be with us to suffer along with us. And even Jesus has to die on a cross and suffer as well as us.
Okay. You mentioned that we see the Daniel's three friends, they stand against the tide.
Yeah.
And you suggested that that's something followers of Jesus should too. But how do you know, like, how do you work out what ways you should be standing against the tide? You know, do you rebel for the sake of rebelling, or what's the...
That's right. So if the take-home message was be countercultural, go against the flow, then really it could be tattoos, body piercing. We're not rebelling for the sake of rebelling. But at this moment, they're realising, no, there's only one God. There's only one God who can save. There's one God they can trust to be in control. So it's all about, I will be loyal to this God. What does being loyal to this God look like? Sometimes it means going with the flow, but here was an obvious case where being loyal to this God means, no, I have to go against the flow because I'm being asked to worship another God, to be disloyal to my own God. And that's why last week was a good compliment to this, where they were able to go with the flow. They were actually able to go and learn from the Babylonian teachers. They were able to learn the literature and language. They even got their names changed. They went with the flow. And interestingly, today, in today's passage, they had their Babylonian names, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So somehow they went with the flow there, but there'll be other areas where they go, no, this will be disloyal to my God. So there are times you can be loyal to God and loyal to culture at the same time, embrace culture and work with culture and even want the best from culture.
Thanks, Sam.
The recording that you have just listened to is from the City Bible Forum. For more information about City Bible Forum events in your city, or to order other talks, please visit citybibleforum.org.